everyone, and welcome to a special midweek edition of Women's Sports Central. I'm Brenda Van Lingen, along with Michelle Vopel, and the national semifinals, the national championship, is in volleyball this Thursday and Friday of this week, and we're going to talk about that in just a few moments, but we're going to focus on basketball first. But with the national semifinals and championship in volleyball being in San Antonio, and then some big, big basketball games being in the state of Texas, I think Michelle and I are going to spend a little time in Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so we figured this out, I think, Brenda, with it's sort of like this is a good weekend to be in the Lone Star State if you like women's sports. So I think we'll have a good time this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I also think we're going to see absolutely the best in women's college athletics this weekend. It's not just that it'll be fun. I mean, we'll really be watching the best at two sports.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, if we get to escape a little cold weather in Kansas City in December, that's not bad either.
Nah, I don't mind.
All right, well, let's look ahead to basketball. We'll go outside of the state of Texas to start and look ahead to the big games this Sunday, just kind of go in chronological order. The first one is Kentucky-Notre Dame. It's at noon on Sunday on ESPNU. And after Kentucky had their big win that we talked about on our last show, and Notre Dame is looking so strong. I mean, after Purdue beat Texas A&M, Notre Dame just dispensed of Purdue and showed their strength on both ends of the court. I'm really looking forward to this game.
I think it's very, very crucial, and we've talked about this before, the elevation of certain programs in certain areas of the country. And I think everybody who follows women's basketball is really excited that that both Louisville and Kentucky have elevated the way they have. And what's cool about this, of course, is it's another, arm, if you will, to that regional rivalry we've talked about, because you've now got, Kentucky and Notre Dame would be a really fun developing rivalry for women's basketball. Indiana and Kentucky and recruiting bases are at least somewhat similar. These kids certainly have to know each other from AAU ball. So that just makes it a lot of fun. And we're going to see just how good this Notre Dame offense can do against a defense that wants to, sort of like the old Gary Blair motto, take pretty ball and make it ugly ball. So we'll see, how Notre Dame does with that. But I think pretty well, because, they do have a lot of experience, and obviously they have a very, very good point guard running the show.
Yes, Kentucky brings Adia Matthews, and she had a great game in the win over Duke. But we talked about the couple of freshmen that are really coming along for Matthew Mitchell in Kentucky. But the veterans, the core for Notre Dame, just are so good in so many different ways. Everybody's aware of Skylar Diggins and the way she quarterbacks that team. Natalie Novosel and Mallory and Peters are just so strong, and they just have so many elements there that it will be interesting to see how efficient Notre Dame's offense is able to be with the disruptive defense of Kentucky. Let's take a look now at the next game of the day, A&M and USC.
And who's doing that broadcast, Brenda?
I am going to be on that broadcast on Fox Sports Net. Looking forward to getting some Big 12 games on Fox Sports Net, and that'll be the first, of course, the matchup with USC of the Pac-12. And you and I had a chance just a few weeks ago to go watch USC play at Nebraska, and that's where we were really impressed with the Huskers, and they've had some good wins since then. But when USC came back and made it a 6-point game late in the second half, Nebraska was able to go to their two stars, Lindsey Moore and Jordan Hooper, to kind of shut the door on USC. That's one thing that I'm really going to look at in this matchup, is what is the emerging Texas A&M offensive identity, because that's where they had problems against Purdue. They had problems against UConn because they only scored 51 points in each of those games. Is it going to be Kelsey Bone on the block that they try to go to and set up the offense? Is it going to be the sharpshooting of Tyra White? Or who is it that they're going to build their offense around, and will they be able to do it consistently? Because, you know, Michael Cooper with USC will always emphasize defense, but just like in that game that we saw, when USC, and they've got a lot of talented players, if they make a run, who's A&M going to go to get some scores?
Yeah, really sort of a come back a little bit to earth kind of week for A&M. And not that I don't think they were, you know, thinking, oh, this season's going to be a breeze. But I do think sometimes it's good for them to, you know, to struggle a little bit, or a lot, as was the case with UConn. But it's kind of interesting. Both the Southern Cal volleyball team and the Southern Cal women's basketball team are going to be in the heart of Texas this week. And, you know, after watching Alex Jupiter, I have a feeling that they wouldn't mind having her, even if she's never had a basketball in her hands before. They might just lob in, you know, she might just do inbounds plays and then lob it into her. But when we saw USC, one of the things that Michael Cooper said was, you know, we're still trying to, you know, really figure out our identity too.
Right.
Because, and everybody, you know, follows women's hoops knows this, USC has just had such a horrible time with injuries over the year and over the years, and just really getting their identity, even though they have older players and they have a lot of experience, with being at USC, they haven't necessarily had tons of experience being on the court together. So if that team can stay healthy, I really respect the non-conference schedule that they've played. USC's really tested themselves. I mean, they've gone to a lot of different places. You know, not a lot of Pac-12 teams are going to the likes of Lincoln, Nebraska, and College Station.
And Georgia,
absolutely. So USC can go into the Pac-12 season feeling like, even if their record isn't as great as they want it to be, feeling like, hey, you know, we've really tested ourselves. So I'm interested to see that game from both teams' perspectives. Right. Like we said, we want to see how Texas A&M, you know, if they're going to, I think that's a great way to put it, their emerging offensive identity. But also, how has this sort of, you know, all these tests really helped USC grow up quicker than I think probably a lot of teams have when they've played, you know, what I call the more, you know, the cupcakey cream puffer type schedules.
Yeah, and they certainly have not, and they lost those three games in a row earlier, but then they came back and beat Gonzaga, a top 25 team, which we all know from watching them through the NCAA tournament. Now they're not the same team without Courtney Vandersloot, but they're still a very good program, and so that's a good win for USC, and I'm really interested to see this matchup with so many talented players that are recovering from varying injuries, as you mentioned. But Texas A&M will not necessarily retire the jersey of Danielle Adams, but lift her jersey to the rafters. And so Danielle Adams will be there. So maybe her being in the building helps their offensive punch a little bit. And it will be a festive day.
Would that it could work that way, huh? I bet Gary would love it if that were possible. She could just sort of channel her shooting ability and just transfer. Here, Kelsey Bone, you can... Now suddenly you can hit threes like crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Well, I've seen Bone take a few of them, but her strength obviously on the block.
Yeah.
And that's where A&M will have an advantage against USC, is her strength inside. And so can they take advantage of that? Will they take advantage of
that? Yeah, absolutely right. And they really need to. And I know they know that, because that is one area where USC, they are a little skinny inside. So they're athletic, very, very athletic. But that's going to be an area that Bone could probably, if she really asserts herself, could really be a handful for them.
And so that takes us to after the game. You and I will stick around to hear Gary Blair and Michael Cooper's words of wisdom and any other players after the game, and then hop in a car and drive up to Waco and be a part of what should be a very special game, number one versus number two. The University of Connecticut making its first trip ever to Waco, Texas. They've only met two times, in 2010 and the Final Four in San Antonio, and then last year, of course, at Connecticut, the great game that there was the possibility Baylor was going to stop the win streak for Connecticut, but it didn't happen, and Connecticut won. So Baylor has the opportunity to be at home. They've never beaten Connecticut. All eyes will be upon this game, and I'm so glad we're going to be there courtside.
Oh, it's going to be one of the most fun games, I think, of the season. And, you know, this is one of the things that I'll be writing about this week for previewing it, is that, you know, nothing's going to replace Tennessee-UConn, because that had developed such a history from the time they first met in 95. But if there was something that could be a pretty, I think, reasonable facsimile, and by that I do mean, I totally understand it can't replace it, but from the standpoint of North versus South and big personality coach, and I believe Baylor's not going anywhere. I think as long as Kim Mulkey's there, they're going to be good every year. They're going to recruit the best kids, and their recruiting base is in Texas. But Baylor's, you know, in the position now that they can recruit all across the country, and so
if they need to,
exactly. So, you know, it's can be a lot of fun, I think, for fans to get involved in this rivalry, and it will be a blast, I think, being there that night, because Baylor folks are going to be, I think they're going to be resting their voices for a couple days. And I tell you what, we do have to really, you know, compliment Baylor. When you think about how low a place this athletic department was about a decade ago, going through some really, really difficult and challenging times, and last weekend they had a Heisman Trophy winner for the first time in school history, and this weekend they're hosting number one versus number two in women's basketball. That really says a lot about their athletic department and the progress they've made.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I love the X's and O's of the game, and so just going back and thinking about this matchup, and you know, the big personalities of Kim Mulkey and Gino Auriemma, but they're two of the best strategists in the game, as well as having some of the best players, obviously. And so, you know, some things for people to watch for, I think, are the matchup at that number four position. UConn goes with Kelly Ferris, who is an extremely talented player, but undersized at 5'11". Just one of those hustle players that you love to have on your team. And she's held her own against Chinne Ogumike and other four players, which she's going to have to this year. But she's going to have to contend with Brooklyn Pope and Destiny Williams at that other position away from Brittany Griner. And so I think that's a real key matchup in the game, is to keep an eye on that. How does Kelly Ferris fare? And I'm sure she'll fare well, but it's the size advantage that Williams and Brooklyn Pope have.
And if we see the Dr. Jekyll side of Brooklyn Pope, which was the case this weekend in the Maggie Dixon Classic, Brooklyn was very, very good. If we see that side of her, plus just the standard Destiny Williams, because she is so dependable most games, that's a lot to handle.
Exactly.
That's two very, very good players, two strong physical players. If we see the Mr. Hyde side of Brooklyn Pope, then that works a little bit more to UConn's advantage. Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely right. That's really one of the biggest key matchups in this game. But I got to know, Brenda, if you're Gino Auriemma, what are you doing to Brittany Griner? You faced her twice already, so it's not a brand new thing like it still is for some people. What do you do?
Well, there's the issue of both ends of the court. And what he's been doing throughout the season is really spreading the court and bringing the offense up high with Stephanie Dolson. He doesn't plant her on the block and have her be a true center. He has her come up and set screens and take that 15 to 18 foot shot. That's one way to help your offense against the defense that Brittany Griner provides, is to pull Griner up away, because Dolson's a threat 18 feet away from the basket. So Griner has to come out there. So that's one way you try to neutralize her on the offensive end of the court. Defensively, you don't want to get Dolson in foul trouble, because she is the most reliable post player, you know, and you've got some others that can come in there, but that's a real key. And that's, I think, another key issue to watch. But you know, he's crafty in where he brings double teams from. He even threw some zone at A&M when they played A&M. They play such great man-to-man, but they threw some zone. So he's crafty in how he brings different looks during the course of a game. And I think it's going to be a real chess match. I don't think that they'll defend Brittany Griner the same way the whole game. I could tell you, you know, maybe they'll start bringing a guard down to double. Maybe they'll front and back with post players. But I don't. Here's what I know for sure. It won't be the same throughout the game because there will be the constant chess match between Mulkey and Ariema on that.
What do you think about if there's a concern, and I use that word loosely because, I mean, so far Baylor has, you know, survived every test well, but there's been some little worry that Brittany is not getting the touches that they would want her to get in the first half as Baylor adjusts to whatever defensive looks that they're getting in the first half. Do you think that's something that Kim Mulkey is especially going to be trying to focus on, is getting Brittany in that rhythm as early as possible?
I would think so, and I think just being at home is going to help that. You know, when they haven't played well in the first half, i.e. the Tennessee game and even against St. John's this past weekend, they're away from the friendly environment of the Farrell Center. So I think just being at home, you know, ups the amp level for everybody. And, you know, Brittany runs the court harder earlier, and they make a concerted effort to get her the ball early. And if they don't, they will, you know, it comes down to that four position. So is Williams and or Pope active, and are the guards ready to pull the trigger from three, or those mid-range jumpers are taking it to the rim? So I do think, in answer to your question, I do think it is a concern that but I think also Kim Mulkey is confident enough in her team that she can play through a first half of just seeing how the other team is reacting, make whatever adjustments at halftime, and then come out strong. And they've done that in the second half over and over.
You mentioned Dolson's ability to both hit the outside shot, but also what a good screener she is,
yes,
and bringing,
yes,
the offense up. It seems to me like there's very few teams consistently over the years who have been better at being able to utilize their screens and penetrate because they're, mm-hmm, so good at finishing at the rim, and everybody on the court is. I think that's definitely the case with this year's team, and they'll need to do that. How does that then maybe even magnify the importance of somebody like a Jordan Madden, who probably is the best all-around defensive player in terms of everybody that and Brittany, I guess I should say Brittany Griner's the most dominant defensive,
right,
player, but in terms of somebody who you could put on almost anybody on the court, Jordan Madden, I guess, would say the most versatile, mm-hmm, defender. How is that going to impact her importance because of the way that UConn can get to the rim?
Well, it goes back to what you and I talked about before the season started. I think that coaches are making adjustments to that restrictive arc being under, mm-hmm, the basket. If you reverse the ball quickly, you can attack the rim because the defense is having to shift, and it's easier to put the ball on the floor and go all the way to the rim because the defense has to come all the way from the backside. So in answer to your question, it's so important to contain dribble penetration, and it's difficult to do that when the offense is all spread out because there's just so much room for them to operate. And if you allow them to reverse the ball quickly, they're going to be able to get in, and that defense on the backside has to rotate over, get their both feet outside of the restrictive arc under the basket to be in position. But I think, you know, just watching Connecticut, in several games in this non-conference schedule, they are taking advantage of that as well as anybody at reversing the ball and then attacking and, you know, taking advantage of help side being slow to rotate over. So that's another key component in this game, is how well the team defense of Baylor comes together.
And this is, Brenda said it several times, this is going to be a game of matchups, but also of adjustments that are going to happen, not just at halftime, but through the course,
sure,
of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to disparage, coaches in general, but not all coaches are as good at making those adjustments in game and having them immediately pay off something into something as Kim Mulkey and Gino Auriemma are. So it's a fair fight, mm-hmm, you know, from that standpoint too, that you're going to see great athleticism, great skills out on the court, but the same kind of really high level coaching on both sides of the the bench, if you will, mm-hmm. both from UConn and from Baylor. So and I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast to watch, I think.
Another quick thing just to mention is the turnovers.
You know,
UConn has done a great job of forcing turnovers in their wins over Stanford and A&M, and their defense doesn't get enough credit. And so Baylor is going to have to take good care of the basketball, as will Connecticut. And I think you've got two great. I mean, there's a reason they're the number one.
We haven't mentioned the point guards either, have we? Have we gotten through and haven't mentioned just how good the point guards on these two teams are? I mean, you're absolutely right. Odyssey Sims, to me, one of the things that makes Odyssey Sims intimidating is that it's just that look she has, like. Yeah, you could just drive a bulldozer onto this court, and I don't care. I'll get around it. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. I mean, she is so unflappable. She's almost the perfect. Just her demeanor is perfect for Kim Mulkey, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. of that confidence.
Well, even at Media Day this year, I was going to interview Brittany Griner, and Odyssey Sims steps in front and says, "No, you got to go through me before you get an interview with Brittany Griner." And she was serious.
And sure enough, you're probably willing to do that. And obviously Hartley. I mean, Bria Hartley is just matured. You know, that way we saw them last year. They're both freshmen in that big game that was the potential streak buster, and they both played so well. They both were such big factors. These are two kids that from the second they stepped on campus, they were key players, and more than that, they were ready to consistently have to take the most yelling, the most, mm-hmm. you know, instruction, have that responsibility on their shoulders as point guards, as true freshmen, and that's pretty impressive.
And they did it in this matchup last year. Mm-hmm. Both Hartley and Sims had big games when these two teams played. So many reasons to watch this game. The number one and number two teams in the country, and all the reasons we've outlined, we're going to be there courtside. So it will be
8:30 Central time or 8:30 Eastern time. So all the NFL stuff, other than the Sunday night game, which I don't even know what it is. Sorry, is over. So yeah.
No reason.
People got to be watching this game.
It'll
absolutely
be great. It will be great. Elsewhere in the country, we wanted to just mention that
big Sunday, isn't
yeah,
it?
North Carolina will be at South Carolina, a new and emerging real rivalry in women's basketball. And Vandy, who is undefeated, will be going to North Carolina State.
You know, Vandy, I got a chance to see them in person. Really I'm impressed with their backcourt, but they haven't played the toughest non-conference schedule. They did play Oklahoma, but going to Raleigh is should be at least a decent test for them. And then, I'm interested in North Carolina, South Carolina. It's never, been a traditional rivalry in women's basketball, but, in some way, there's no reason it shouldn't be.
Right.
Right now, North Carolina, is undefeated, and South Carolina has only two losses. So it may be a good opportunity to see how good both those squads are. And, and I think everybody is still sort of waiting for South Carolina to make that step forward under Dawn Staley that they haven't quite made yet.
And what an opportunity to do that. We're running out of time for basketball, and we've got Tennessee
Stanford.
I
believe I said North Carolina is undefeated. They're not. One loss for North Carolina, two losses for South Carolina. So I don't. But Vandy is undefeated.
There you go. Tennessee, Stanford, always a great matchup around the holidays. They'll be playing next Tuesday on the 20th. Another very important game. I just love it that all the top teams play each other except Tennessee and Connecticut. But pretty much you're seeing everyone having the opportunity to go against each other. Another great rivalry.
And what I think will be especially touching about this game is I would expect the Stanford fans, who are among the most knowledgeable and among the most appreciative of women's sports history, will give Pat Summitt a fantastic welcome into Maples Pavilion. I think that'll be a great moment for her. And then the hospitality stops because they do have quite a rivalry, even though Tennessee has really dominated it over the years. Stanford's, I think, going to be very, very eager to show that they're much improved from that loss against UConn. So that'll be another fun game, and another tough game for Tennessee. We mentioned, you know, with Ariel Massengale out, you know, it's another test that they have to undergo, and it means that Shekinah Strickland a lot of times is going to handle the ball more. You know, she doesn't. She's willing to do that. She's been willing to do that all her career. I think she's much more comfortable when Ariel Massengale's in the game, and she can and she can, you know, play her natural position at the wing. But she's going to have to do you know, the duty that she's done so much at Tennessee. And we'll see how Stanford's guards, which are young and quicker, see how they can take advantage of that possibly.
So that will be next Tuesday. That's December 20th. But we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about the volleyball championship. The national semifinals will be this Thursday and the national championship this Saturday. And we'll come back and preview those last four standing. This is Women's Sports Central. Welcome back to Women's Sports Central. I'm Brenda Van Lingen along with Michelle Vopel. And now it's time to preview the we can't call it the Final Four of volleyball, or we're not supposed to because that's trademarked to basketball, but that's what it is. It's the Final Four. It's the last four that are still playing in volleyball, and the national semifinals this Thursday and the championship on Saturday. Now, before we get started, we did a little prediction in our last show, and
yay, Brenda.
We said that we weren't even going to bring it up if we were off, but
you were very close.
I was very close. Well, we both picked Illinois and UCLA advancing, so we were two for two there early in the day. And then I picked Iowa State that just narrowly lost to Florida State 15-11 in the final fifth set. And then I picked USC, and they made it. So I was three out of four and pretty close on the fourth one. So I'm just gonna mention that before we get started.
Yes, Brenda, you did a great job with the predictions. and I have to say, I really sort of hoped for USC's sake because I do think they're the best team, and I guess you're not supposed to say that as a writer. And I thought Hawaii would probably pull it out because they were at home, but I really do think USC is the best team overall. And so I felt like when the way that the committee went with giving them a number seven seed, which, you know, I might have mentioned once or twice, was ridiculous, that I hope they would be able to pull it out because I thought they deserved to be at the Final Four and that we deserved a chance to see them at the Final Four. So I know everybody listening, before you turn it off, you say, oh, they're talking about volleyball, I'm only into basketball. This is the weekend to watch, even if you're not into volleyball, because the Final Four is a lot of fun. And if that doesn't convince you, how can you not watch a team that has somebody named Alex Jupiter who can jump out of the gym? She is one of the most
out of the
fun. Yeah, absolutely. She's one of the most fun players to watch. And I think this is Florida State is a team I've got to give them credit for what they did. I mean, they were basically playing on it almost felt more like an Iowa State home court because they had so many more fans, and they were able to come back and beat them. But that was by far the least loaded of the brackets. I mean, that's the reality. And in fact, their coach Chris Poole said, you know, to make the Final Four, you have to get some breaks. Well, they got a break because they did not have to play you know, a major power. Some people might say that's not fair to say about Iowa State, but Iowa State's not there yet. They've never been to a Final Four, so in that sense, Iowa State and Florida State were on even footing in terms of trying to advance to their first Final Four when they met each other. So we've got UCLA, who we did both pick, and I think both of us felt like you know, they are right there with UCLA or with USC, and they've beaten USC this season. So we could have an all Pac-12 final. It could happen. And then lastly, Illinois, a program that when I was in college was really a little bit more of a national power, and they went to two Final Fours. I say when I was in college, but you were in college too then, Brenda. So
when we were in college.
Right after we graduated, 87-88, Illinois went to the Final Four. So it's been a while since they've been there, but they're back now. And I think, you know, I think that's a program that also is, you know, really done a lot to improve itself. It's never, they've never gone away. I don't want to suggest Illinois is ever been a bad program, because they've been good, but they haven't been that national level good to make a Final Four in a little bit of a little bit of time. They've been to some Sweet 16s, but that's something under Kevin Hambly that they've been able to do. And I think we're going to see probably, if I was going to predict, I have to be honest with you, I think UCLA is going to beat Florida State and probably beat them in a sweep or 3-1. And then I think we're going to see a pretty decent match with USC and Illinois, but going with USC, and then it's a Pac-12 final, and I will go with USC to win the national championship.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you, but UCLA, what a script they'll be able to write if they should win the national championship, even if they don't. They beat Penn State, the four-time defending national champion. Then they knock off Texas, who had the number one seed in this tournament and also has been to several Final Fours in a row. So that's what they had to go through to get through their regional. Then you look at USC. They had to play Hawaii on their home court, and what an incredible match that was, going to five sets. And then the match against Pepperdine came down to five sets as well. After USC jumped out to the first set win, Pepperdine came back and won two in a row, and Pepperdine gave them all they could handle. But it was Alex Jupiter, and what a tremendous talent she is, and just so much fun to watch. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be a Pac-12 final. I'll give the edge to USC, but if UCLA wins that game, what a string of wins they would have had to get there.
Yeah, talk about earning your title when you're probably the best team. It's like you're the best team, and nothing's been given to you at all. In fact, you've been sent to, as you mentioned, that Hawaii matchup with Hawaii was one of the best matchups you're going to see in women's college volleyball. It had so much passion, so many pivotal key moments. I'm so sorry that it was on late a lot, and it was on the internet. So, you know, you had to watch it on your computer and had to stay up late, but it was well worth it to see. And I also want to give a compliment to Michael Seeley, the coach of UCLA. He was really having problems figuring out why his team was struggling when they were sort of feeling the love, if you will. When they got to number one, they started doubting themselves. They were a team that really didn't deal well with some teams don't deal well with adversity, but other teams don't deal well when things are happening good for them. Right. It's like prosperity kind of freaks them out a little bit. And he contacted Sue Enquist, a longtime UCLA women's volleyball coach who's won so many national titles and been involved with so many championship teams, and said
softball.
Yes, I'm sorry. And said to her, "Hey, I'm having trouble figuring out my group. They're talented, but for some reason, prosperity seems to scare them. They don't play that well against teams that aren't as good as they are." Mm. And Sue Enquist, who's won all those softball titles, and sometimes, she said, won them with teams that weren't as good, and sometimes won them with teams that were very good, went in and talked to the UCLA Bruins volleyball team. And Michael Seeley said, an hour later, when we started practice, I could tell the difference. And I want to give him a lot of credit, because not all coaches would do that. They're, you know, coaches can be very, very
territorial.
But he knew that there was somebody that was affiliated with his school that he'd known from, because he's actually a UCLA graduate and played volleyball for the UCLA men's team. So he knew Sue, both from his time as an athlete and from his time as an assistant coach previously at UCLA, and knew that she knew how to get championships out of teams and was smart enough and not territorial enough that he was like, and not insecure enough, some coaches are, to say, "Hey, can you come talk to my group?" Well, they're in the Final Four. And I give him a lot of credit. I think that's just good coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Use your resources to the best of your abilities in a coaching position, and who better to go to than somebody that's won so many national titles? Well, I'm looking forward to it this Thursday, December 15th. It's UCLA and Florida State at 7 o'clock, and Illinois and USC at 9 o'clock. And then the championship will be on December 17th, which is Saturday at 8:30 p.m. So enjoy those games. Any parting shots before you head to Texas, Michelle?
Yeehaw! I'm ready to go. I'm really looking forward to it. And as you guys can probably tell, I do a little bit of volleyball evangelism, but it's because that is such a fun sport at the highest level to watch, and the idea that we get to see in person such great volleyball athletes and such great women's basketball athletes. I mean, talk about an early Christmas present for us. It really is.
Yeah.
And we see it in person. So we're very, very fortunate.
Fantastic. So the volleyball is Thursday and Saturday. Then Texas A&M hosts USC at College Station. I'll be on that broadcast on Fox Sports Net on Sunday afternoon. And then the number
then
one
versus
number Brenda two.
Just picture Brenda and me jumping in the car and hoping not to get pulled over by the Texas State Patrol as we head
we
up to.
Speeding.
No, we won't be. As we head up to Waco.
It will be a fun next few days. Thanks for joining us on this special midweek edition of Women's Sports Central. Have a great week and weekend, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks again, and let other people know about Women's Sports Central and share in our passion and enthusiasm for volleyball and basketball and all the other women's sports. On behalf of Michelle Vopel, I'm Brenda Van Lingen.